Today on Straight Talk Africa, hunger, malnutrition and starvation. In South Sudan, Somalia, Nigeria and Yemen, more than 20 million people are reportedly starving. Observers say the challenge requires an urgent, collective and coordinated global effort that has yet to be realized. That's coming up next right here on Straight Talk Africa. Hello, welcome to Straight Talk Africa, live from the Voice of America studios here in Washington. I am Shaka Sali.
Viewers and listeners on the continent and elsewhere. I'm Ayan Bior, your social media reporter.
Today, we'll have a discussion and analysis of the fundamental root causes of drought and famine in Africa.
Coming up later, our audience has weighed in on our topic through emails, Facebook, and Twitter comments, and we'll reveal some of them ahead on Straight Talk Africa.
The next time you sit down to eat some food with your family or community, take a moment to consider that 20 million people across most of four countries in Africa and Yemen faced starvation and famine. My colleague, Paul Sisco, has more.
The United Nations' Stephen O'Brien says the world is facing its greatest humanitarian crisis since the end of World War II.
More than 20 million people across four countries face starvation and famine.
Stephen Lowerier is the UNICEF representative in Baidoa.
We've seen this morning as well in a nutritional center, all these severely, acutely malnourished babies. Very, very sad story, where we also see the figures going up.
David Orr is the Southern African World Food Program spokesperson.
South Sudan, Somalia, Yemen, and Nigeria, the United Nations humanitarian operations in these four countries require more than $5.6 billion this year, and at least $4.4 billion required to the end of March to avert a catastrophe. And so far, the UN has only received $90 million, so that's 2 cents for every dollar needed.
Relief agencies estimate up to 15 million people in Somalia, Ethiopia, and Kenya are facing food and water shortages. Just 6 years ago, more than a quarter million Somalis died in drought-induced famine. AID officials say food and water exist on the planet to meet everyone's needs. But armed conflicts, often created by just a very few men, result in the misery and chaos of millions, destroying markets, crops, making necessities scarce and the money to buy them unattainable. In starving South Sudan, both rebel soldiers, led in part by Riek Machar, and President Salva Kiir's government soldiers intentionally block emergency food distribution, often by hijacking food trucks, leaving entire communities marooned in swamps filled with disease and with little to eat other than chewable plants and only dirty water to wash with and drink. On Saturday, six aid workers and their Kenyan escort were ambushed and killed in South Sudan while traveling from the capital Juba toward the needy in the town of Pibor. Jens Lark is with the United Nations Office of Humanitarian Affairs.
It is a country which is in the depth of a very, very vicious war. But of course, those who are responsible must be held to account.
In northeastern Nigeria, the battle grinds on between Islamic terrorists, Boko Haram and others, and the Nigerian military. The conflict has displaced millions of people, leaving more than 10 million people in desperate need of humanitarian assistance. That need has also spread to the surrounding countries in the Lake Chad region. Meanwhile, in Yemen, a trade blockade and steady aerial bombings by Saudi Arabia have destroyed the nation's economy, sending food prices soaring and pushing hundreds of thousands of, mostly children, to the brink of starvation. Despite scientific evidence that climate change is increasing the frequency of drought and floods, it is mostly man's inhumanity to man, not rising temperatures or this season's lack of rain, that has left many nations across Africa parched, malnourished, and in danger of famine. Paul Sisko, VOA News, Washington.
Thanks, Paul, for that report. To learn more on the situation in Somalia, VOA Somali reporter Abdulaziz Osman joins us live via Skype from Hargeisa, Somaliland. Good evening, Abdulaziz.
Good evening, Saka.
How are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you very much. How are you?
I am terrific. Give us a sense as to what's happening on the ground.
Well, the situation or the drought crisis in this part of the region, Somaliland, where I have been staying for the last 8 days, it's very critical. I've been traveling to the eastern Somaliland, Togdere, Sanaag, and Sool region, which are the most affected or the worst hit areas. I've met a lot of people, nomadic communities, and other people in the urban and rural cities, and the drought has actually a huge impact on them. Somaliland officials have said that the drought has killed more than 8 of the livestock of this region. So the situation is very critical, and what I have seen, it was not something that was great. It was really painful to see the nomadic communities suffering and losing their livestock, which is their livelihood.
Now, we're talking about an area, or they would prefer, of course, to say a nation, that is slightly more than 6 million people. How much of that population is affected?
In Somaliland, where I have been staying, we could say more than 1.5 million here affected by the drought. And that's could be the half of the population in this breakaway region of Somaliland. So and these people are living in these three regions, Sool, Sanaag, and Togdere, and all of them, majority of them or most of them, are people living in the rural area. And now they fled from the rural area. They stream into the main cities in search of food and water.
What about the issue of responding? We're talking about the government and probably the international community. Any evidence on the ground so far?
During my trip, I haven't seen any significant assistance delivered to those people affected by the drought. And Somaliland government is it has a very limited resource, and it cannot cope the scale of this crisis. But there are a few aid organizations, including UNICEF and ARC, American Refugee Committee, who are providing some sort of food, water, and medical equipment to some areas in those three regions. But during my trip, I haven't seen any significant response from either the UN or aid agents or from the Somaliland government.
What do you think that people most need? Is it food? Is it water? Or is it both?
Both, because they don't have water. They don't have water because there is no rain. The rain didn't come in 3 consecutive years. So the well is dried up. There is no river. There is no valleys. There is nothing. So they need, they are in very critical situation. So they need they need water, and they need food as well. And they are losing their livelihood. I have met a young man 3-4 days ago in Togdere region, who said that his family has lost more than 100 camels. So it's really very painful, and the drought is really killing not only the goats or the other, it's killing the camel, which is the most persistent animal to the hardship or to the drought. So it shows that how severe the situation is.
To what extent were they taken unaware? Because there are people who obviously would talk about some sort of an early warning system.
The United Nations, the companies that work with the United Nations or connected to the United Nations have been warning or sending the warning at the beginning of last year and appealing to the international community to take an action before it's too late. But it sounds like that appeal or that warning has not been responded.
Thank you very much for talking to us, Abdulaziz, all the way from Hargeisa.
Thank you very much.
You're most welcome. And for an update on the situation in Kenya and South Sudan, joining us live via Skype from the Ugandan capital, Kampala, is VOA East Africa correspondent Jill Craig. Good evening, Jill.
Good evening, Shaka.
How are you?
I'm well, thank you.
Talk to us about your recent coverage of the drought in Kenya.
Sure, and I'm sure that some of your listeners and viewers are aware, but Laikipia in central Kenya has been especially hard hit by violence, especially in the last several months. And this was, most believe it was brought on by the drought, although some say that this was this has been happening way before the drought even started. But most of this violence has started within the last several months. And as a result, what has been happening is that many of the northern pastoralists have been coming down to Laikipia to make sure that their cattle, sheep and goats have enough water and pasture, because the northern rangelands where they're coming from, the management has not been the best. So as a result, they don't have grass, they don't have water. They've been coming into central Kenya, into Laikipia region, and what's happening is that many of them are going onto private land, so private ranches and private conservancies. And what happens is that they are then pitted against the landowners who have their own cattle many times, or also in the conservancies, they're also competing with wildlife, who also need access to that pasture, and they need access to the water. Complicating this further is that there's also local people who have their own cattle, goats, and sheep, and many of them have their own agreements worked out with these larger landowners so that they can graze their animals in those private areas themselves. So what has happened is that this drought has pitted so many people against one another, and another problem is that many of the northern pastoralists are bringing illegally acquired firearms and ammunition into these ranches, into these conservancies. And so when you actually visit these areas, if I could just paint a picture quickly for you, for people that have actually been on safari in central Kenya, they might remember it as a very lush place, lots of animals, lots of wildlife. It's a very popular location. The royals vacation when they come to Kenya at an area just on the border of Laikipia. So it's a very, very popular place on the tourist circuit. Currently, you see rocks, there's dust, and there's dead animal carcasses basically littering the landscape. Above, there's vultures circling and hyenas on the ground. And it seems to me right now that the vultures and the hyenas are the only ones who are doing well in central Kenya.
You know, we talk about how, of course, part of the problem perhaps is because there is lack of rain. From what you have been able to see, what is the fundamental cause of the ongoing drought in that region?
Well, in terms of the ongoing drought, I can't specifically comment on what's causing the drought. What I can tell you is that the reason why why this problem has become so intense is for a few reasons. One, the pastoralists from northern parts are bringing tens of thousands of cattle in addition to sheep and goats. And so they have pretty much overgrazed most of the communal lands in northern Kenya. And as a result, when you overgraze, that means that the root has actually been pulled out, and that makes it very, very difficult for several seasons to regrow that pasture unless proper measures are taken. Right now, there's not a real strong form of rangelands management, from what I've been told. And so as a result, they can't stay there because they have no resources for their animals. So another problem complicating this particular drought, Shaka, is that, as your listeners, I'm sure, are aware, Kenya's gearing up for its elections in August. And what has been happening is that some of the politicians have been alleged to be inciting their followers and their constituents, many of these pastoralists, to go down onto private lands and feel free to take what they need, which has further complicated this situation. Many of them are angry because many of these ranches and conservations are owned by whites, and they're telling their constituents that it's time to take their land back. Now, when you talk to local people who are in the direct vicinity, and I interviewed many, many locals, they do not want the Mzungu or white people to leave. They say that these are the people that have helped them in this particular drought. I kind of stumbled into a few food distributions on my reporting assignment, where some of the local landowners were distributing food, and then in other cases, they had actually pumped water from their own boreholes to help the local villagers. So from what I could ascertain from my interviews, people are very, for the most part, very pleased with their rancher neighbors, and they're upset that these newcomers are bringing firearms into their villages. They are stealing their livestock. And, you know, for a small holder, having 15 sheep or goats stolen is a big deal. And so local people are not happy. And so as a result of all of this, Kenya has deployed its military, which started operations, I believe, at the end of last week. And today they kicked into higher gear.
I was actually going to ask you about the response of the government authorities, because Kenya does have a reputation, at least for being governed reasonably well.
Yes, and this situation, because of its complexity, there have been some stops and some starts. There was a ranch owner that was killed at the beginning of this month. He was going out to check on some burned lodges when he was attacked by some of these pastoralists, or as some of the ranchers call them, invaders, because they are on private property. But I can say that I've got a source who informed me that today, actually, KDF, or the military, in conjunction with the Kenyan police services, started operations in the Laikipia Nature Conservancy. And apparently, from what I'm told, they didn't give proper notice, allegedly, to the pastoralists who were there. So they went in and started shooting cattle. Well, you can imagine that did not go over so well. And so up until about an hour ago, I was told that there was burning and shots fired at the Laikipia Nature Conservancy in Laikipia. Now, I tried to get in touch with the spokesman for the Interior Ministry to confirm what he knew from his side of the security operations, and he said he was going to be looking into it, and I have not been able to get in touch with him yet, but I'll keep working on that to see what the status is as of now. But unfortunately, it seems as though, and I can say that many of the locals that I talked to last week were concerned about the military being deployed, because they said that although they're happy for the extra security, they also realize that if it's not handled in a delicate way, if the military and the police operations go in guns blazing, so to speak, they are the ones left on the ground when all the dust has settled and the security forces are gone, and they have to deal with the retaliation. So so right now, I think people are just very much on edge in the area, knowing, you know, both how are the police and the military handling this, and how are the pastoralists going to respond.
On that note, thank you so much, Jill, for your insight. And, of course, I wish you the best of luck in the Ugandan capital, Kampala.
Thank you, Shaka. Thank you.
You're most welcome. Now, joining us here in our Washington studio are two distinguished guests. Yasmin Mahamud, founder and CEO of Humanity Against Poverty and author of Nomad Diaries. And Shannon Scribner, Associate Director, Humanitarian Programs and Policy, Oxfam America. Well, ladies, I have to say frankly that I am profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the opportunity to host the two of you for the first time on Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you for having us, Shaka.
You're most welcome. And both of you look like having some connections to California, the Golden State. That's true?
Yeah, that gorgeous California. Yeah, I lived in San Diego for a while.
You live in San Diego, and of course, you are a Valley girl.
Born and raised in Burbank, California. Big Warriors fan.
From
UCLA
the Valley.
Fan.
Yes. UCLA, Hollywood. Terrific. Later in the program, we'll give you a chance to call and talk with our guests. The number to call is 202-619-3111, and the U.S. country code is 1. Let me come to you immediately. You listened to the two correspondents on the ground. Your reaction?
First, I want to take the time to offer my condolences to the people who have died in this drought and famine. We keep forgetting that these are human beings like us, and these are families losing their loved ones. So my pure condolences goes to them. And as far as Somalia is concerned, we heard Abdelaziz talking about 1.5 million in Somaliland, and we were talking about 6 million all over Somalia. That's a staggering number.
That's about half of the population, really.
Yeah, it really is a stain on our humanity. And for us to, as human beings, to allow that to happen to human beings like us, you wonder what happened, where's the breakdown, and what is going on where, I understand in southern Sudan and in Yemen there are wars going on. In Somalia there's conflict, but it's a much more stable country now. But you
Somalia.
In Somalia.
It's, but it, you did have pretty much the same thing about 6 years ago.
Yeah. Every 6 years, we wake up and we pretend we're shocked that this is happening. So in my organization, what we try to work on is mitigation, drought mitigation. We need to have in place, because these are, the most affected are the rural population. Rural population who have... who are already living on less than $1 a day.
Right.
And then when this happens, there's nothing in place to safeguard their lives. So what we have been working on and what we suggest to the international community is to have drought mitigation, to have systems in place so that when this happens, there's early warning for the drought. And there is systems put in place, for example, for the rural affected area. I'm from the Senag region, and I was there last year, and I was shocked that people walk for days for water. We need to have water beds. We need to have water wells. We need to have food distribution centers all over the rural areas. These things are not in place right now. That's why people walk for days, and in the process, they die because they're already starving from hunger.
Do you agree with some who say that Somalia is not really a failed state, that rather it is a collapsed state because a lot of other activities, frankly, they go on normally.
Yeah.
But the problem is the state.
Somalia is a very unique case, as we all know. And whether you call it whatever you will, life goes on, and there are systems that are in place that are working. I agree with your colleague that was reporting that this is definitely a man-made disaster, because it's not just the rains that have caused this. If you have, as I said, systems in place, then this wouldn't have happened. So you have the mismanagement, you have the corruption, and you have all those things that are really, unknown for Africa, that's happening also in Somalia. And you have, we have a brand new government, which we are very, very hopeful and very supportive of.
Under President Farmajo.
And our President Farmajo is a very, very unique individual, and he's very supportive of the poorest of the poor and the poverty stricken. So hopefully, you know, we hope that President Farmajo and PM Khayre will do a lot more with famine and will take it really as one of the first priorities of their government. Meanwhile, we need in Africa, we need to stop bringing rural people to the cities. People are walking for days to get to a food distribution center. Meanwhile, there's nothing around them. So I think it should be a concerted effort by the international community, by the government, by the individuals, and the local people. I think another formula that's missing from how we do things is top-down. We keep doing things top-down. Organizations have, you know, community organizations that within the villages or the small cities that are supposed to distribute the food or do the programming. We need to involve local individuals, the women, the youth. These strengthen the system and the society. There's a lot of breakdowns, but there's a lot of opportunities. Being in 2017, we're talking about this issue. Look at the technological levels that we've reached around the globe. How come we cannot use technology to map out the problem and put together a plan?
Early warning systems and all that kind of
early
stuff?
Early warning systems. The government should get involved, the international community, the local community, not just local organizations, but women who may not belong to an organization can organize themselves and really give you solutions to their own problems. So we should really engage local people. I always say local solutions for local problems.
Very interesting. Shannon, what about you? What would you say from your vantage point as, of course, a member of one of the major NGOs?
Yes, so Oxfam is working in South Sudan, so of the countries that were mentioned. So South Sudan, we're in Lake Chad Basin. So for us, we're in Nigeria, Niger, and Chad. We're not in Cameroon. Mm-hmm. And then we're in Kenya, Ethiopia, and Somalia. So just in response to what your colleague said earlier, first of all, I agree, famine, if we're talking about famine, it is a man-made crisis. But we also need to remember...
It is a man-made crisis?
It's a man-made crisis.
But what about the fact that there are also perhaps other things that could actually, you know, come into play?
So absolutely. So conflict is one of those things. Mm-hmm. And then climate change, for sure. And that's the one thing we haven't yet mentioned. And I would say if you look at East Africa in particular, over the last 7 of the last 10 years, we have seen poor rains. Mm-hmm. So drought used to be something we would see every 10 years, you know, in the Horn of Africa. Now we see it every year or every other year. So the situation in that part of the world in particular is that the October rains have failed. And that was following an El Nino that was the highest El Nino we've ever seen on record.
Shannon, you talk about El Nino for the average audience, frankly. Okay. What exactly does that mean?
So El Nino, again, is impacting the weather. So climate change is a change in weather that mm-hmm. we're seeing. So for El Nino, it means that the rain was not on its normal cycle. In some places, it rained harder. In other areas, it didn't rain at all. And this impacted millions of people across Africa. And so it's just these... So we once had these weather, like rains that were predictable, and they're no longer predictable today. So the importance of what Jasmine was saying is that when you have these early warnings that are in place, mm-hmm. we know by satellites, we know by forecast what is happening, but that early warning is not matched with early action. And that is, there's many issues, but that is, I think, one of the main issues. And then just to speak to the local aspect of what you were talking about, the international community, I'll speak for Oxfam as well, the top-down solutions, you know, don't work. We really need to be investing in early warning systems at the community level, bottom-up, national, local NGOs, governance at the national and local level, so that people have all the tools they need, because we know drought is going to hit again and again because of climate change. And then conflict is a whole other issue, and what we're seeing is conflict and drought coming together.
Mm-hmm. Now, Shannon, the other question is, what is the difference between drought and famine?
So famine, if we just start with famine, it is not a word that is used lightly. The definition, in order for there to be a situation of famine, there's a very serious definition that has to be met. And it usually means that an abundance of people have died. So it's usually in a particular area, you know, 20% of households just don't have enough food to eat. Mm-hmm. 30% of people are experiencing what we call acute malnutrition rates. And then you have, you know, of every 10,000 people, you have 2 people that are dying. So we've seen this in Unity State in South Sudan. We think this is happening in northeastern Nigeria in areas that we can actually access, but about 400,000 people may have been impacted by famine. And then in Somalia, there have been 260 deaths, I think, since January. So, but the drought is something that is part of a regular cycle. Mm-hmm. And it's something that people, especially in these countries, have dealt with. They're resilient people. They know how to deal with this. But when you have 7 of the last 10 years with abnormal rains, we have to really scale up our response, because we're not able to handle that today.
And what about the fact that, you know, when you're talking about rain and that kind of stuff, because of climate change, it's no longer predictable, really, because I have even seen right here in Washington, D.C., around New Year's Eve, you are experiencing spring type of temperatures.
Absolutely. Yes, the weather is changing everywhere. And sometimes that is a good thing. But I would say, when, you know, not even to get into an argument about climate change, because that we're in Washington, D.C., and mm-hmm. that's a difficult conversation to have with lots of members of Congress, unfortunately. But it doesn't matter. What matters is the impact on people's lives, and it's having a negative impact on people's lives.
Very interesting. You are tuned into Straight Talk Africa. We'll have more of a discussion in a moment, including our social media segment. So please, don't go away.
not just the next generation of African leaders, they are today's leaders. And this is the time to invest in them. Today, not tomorrow. So let's connect. Let's engage with each other on issues that will transform our societies. Innovation, leadership, entrepreneurship, things that you're doing to move the continent forward to make you the greatest generation that Africa has known. It's Upfront every Wednesday, 1730 UTC, right here on The Voice of America.
This is Straight Talk Africa on The Voice of America. Call us now with your questions and comments. The number is 202-619-3111 and the U.S. country code is 1. Call us direct and we'll call you right back. Remember to turn down the volume on your radio or television and keep your comments brief. Now back to Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you very much, Esther Gidiyuwat, and welcome back to Straight Talk Africa live from Washington. It's time to bring in my colleague and social media reporter, Ayen Bior. Take it away, Ayen.
Thanks, Shaka. As we've been discussing, millions of people across the Horn and East African regions, as well as Nigeria and Yemen, are hard hit by drought and are facing possible starvation. This leads us to our question of the week, which asks, what type of aid do you think is needed to help with Africa's drought and famine? Before we begin, I'd like to thank all of you for using our social media platforms to communicate with us. And another reminder that we are tweeting live today. Use the hashtag VOAAfricaFamine. And if you haven't yet, please follow us at VOAShaka. And speaking of it, let's go to a tweet from Martin Yalusi, who tweets, food and water education on how to fight against drought. There is the Indian Ocean. I wonder why there is drought in Kenya. And we have another tweet from Prince Habat Nkula, who tweets, help should be given with installation of irrigation schemes from the many fresh water sources. And now to our comment of the week from Facebook fan Mamundyange Filippo in Guangdong, China, who writes, we need technological knowledge. Lessons on irrigation systems should be emphasized. But we also need to create boreholes because preparation on such emergencies is necessary. We do not need any help from outside. We need to learn how countries like Saudi Arabia, Emirates, and other desert countries are surviving. We should copy from them and pace that technology to our continent. How long until Africa stops thinking of getting help from outsiders? Well, let's go to another comment from Facebook fan Bamwesije Ruganda, who writes, Africa does not need aid to end famine and droughts. It needs strong policies and policy implementation, government commitment and implementation of environmental policies and incentives for positive externalities will contribute to reducing as well as ending famine and droughts. Now let's go to our last Facebook comment from Atui Abstajos, who writes, Africa needs a serious intervention on climate change. Plant more trees and learn how to conserve the environment. Sustainable agriculture is paramount. Well, thank you, everyone, for your comments. And now a reminder that we appreciate all of the audience feedback, so please keep them coming. And if you're a new fan, drop us a line at africatv@voanews.com. Once again, our email address is africatv@voanews.com. Or post your comment on our Facebook page. Enter the keywords Straight Talk Africa. Interact with our show as it's streaming live. Be sure to visit us online at voaafrica.com. Or you can join our YouTube channel. Sign up to VOA TV to Africa. And follow us on Twitter at @VOAShaka. A reminder that the show is streaming live every Wednesday. Go to VOA Straight Talk Africa TV program page on our website, or simply watch us live on your mobile device. Just download the VOA mobile app. Now let's take a look at what's on tap for next week's program. On the next Straight Talk Africa, we'll discuss Against All Odds, a book written by Cameroonian lawyer Angela Kwemo.
It's a practical guide to making the most of your God-given talents and using them to better yourself, your country, Africa, and the human race. That's all on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Well, that's all for today's social media segment. Shaka, you and the guests have a lot of social media comments to discuss. Back to you.
Thank you very much, Ayen, of course, for sharing the social media response with us. Welcome back to a discussion on the root causes of drought and famine in Africa. Our guests are Yasmin Mahmoud and Shannon Scribner. Well, again, I have to say frankly that I'm profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the two of you on Straight Talk Africa. Thank you. You're most welcome. Your reaction, you had the social media comments.
I think across the board you hear Africans saying Africans need to solve their own problems and they need to put in place systems that work for the poorest of the
African solutions to African problems.
African solutions for African problems.
Who are they specifically referring to here? Because governments, frankly, don't seem to get it.
Yeah, governments seem to think the poverty issues and drought and famine belong to the international community, and that's a huge problem. I have yet to see an African government that has taken this effort to success.
When we talk about the international community, what exactly are we talking about here? Isn't Africa part of the international community?
Well, the way we refer to international community is the UN and the the UK and America and their involvement with the African countries because, and sometimes I think African governments expect the international community to govern the issues of poverty and the issues of a drought and the issues of famine. And that is really a huge problem. We need to create a sector that deals with the issues of each local government. But to talk about the solutions, that brings me back to think about, in the case of Somalia, how the diaspora community is really one of the best solutions that has been happening in Somalia. And that is something that I think gets failed to be mentioned, that remittances, about $2.5 billion, are sent to Somalia on a yearly basis. And that is the lifeline of Somalis.
In Somalia?
In Somalia. I think it's a saving grace, because I think this country would have probably vanished had it not been. I think the $2.5 billion that goes into as remittances is the stability is the only thing that's stable within a family, for a family to send their monthly remittances to their relatives. That's a local solution.
Does that perhaps, to some degree, explain as to why the role of the Somali international community, or the international diaspora, is increasingly politically relevant on the ground in Mogadishu?
Yes, absolutely.
You have the president, the prime minister, you have
diaspora.
The speaker,
yeah,
and you have more than a third, I gather, members of parliament.
The importance of that is that people are bringing their knowledge, the brain drain is going back to Africa.
So it's brain gain.
Brain gain, yes, absolutely. So that really, really does work. But even the individuals who are not in government, the individuals who are working 2-3 jobs in America, because we understand and we know how hard American lifestyles are on the immigrant communities and the refugee communities, that person will probably send half of their salary to their families back home. And that is a local solution. It is a solution that has been holding this community on the ground in Somalia together. I think it really, really is something that doesn't really get mentioned, but it's the only mostly stable thing, income that these families are receiving. So local solutions for local African problems.
Very interesting. What about you, Shannon?
Yeah, so I like the question about what type of aid is needed, because I think it's a complicated question. So it's hard to answer that, because when you have drought, you obviously have people that don't have enough food and they don't have enough water.
Mm-hmm.
And then that leads to malnutrition because they don't have the food that they need. But because they have a lack of water, there's also hygiene issues as
diseases.
Well. That leads to diseases. So we've seen a lot. We always, in drought situations, see cholera, we see acute watery diarrhea, we see measles, we see those things spreading. And because you don't have clean water to then hydrate people and treat them, people die as a result of these diseases. So you need the food, of course, but you also need water and sanitation. You need the hygiene. You need not just nutrition, but health services, vaccinations for children. And then education has taken a big hit just because millions of children are not in school. So it's not one type of assistance. It's a lot of different types of assistance that's needed.
Very interesting. Talking about food and water, I was doing some research and I found that it is even perhaps more important to have, in fact, unfettered access to water than food. That, in fact, a human being can spend many, many days without eating and remain alive, but it takes only 5 days without water for the human being to die. Have you come across that data?
I haven't seen that data, but what's happening is people are preserving their water because it's so important that they're not using, if they're skipping meals, because if they need water to cook, they'll preserve that water instead. So it's absolutely true how essential water is as well.
Very interesting. What about, aid from outside? It's just like Africans, frankly, are waiting for, quote-unquote, manna from heaven. Mm-hmm. There are people who say that African governments, frankly, do not lack funds, for example, for buying AK-47s. But they don't have money to feed their own people. And yet, they are, in fact, in some cases, the cause of why their people are starving. True?
It's very unfortunate that even funds from food that's donated to drought or famine is sold in the streets and become the AK-47s that you're talking about. So yes, it's a power struggle. It's a way for one politician or some guy who wants to take over the country uses the aid. So that's why the systems are broken.
Do you have incontrovertible evidence on that?
I don't really have any evidence that I've collected, but look at Nigeria, Boko Haram. This is a country that, you know, stable government shouldn't have these issues in the east of Nigeria.
In fact, until the new president came into office, Muhammad Buhari, Boko Haram occupied a territory that is the equivalent of Belgium, the kingdom of Belgium, correct?
Absolutely. And these are the contributing factors to this famine. In Nigeria, it's Boko Haram. In Somalia, it's Al-Shabaab. The areas that Al-Shabaab controls right now is some of the most severe hit because you just can't penetrate that area and bring food to the people who need it. So aid is a very... It can be a saving grace, but at the same time, it can really be used to create the famine that we're talking about today.
Now, talking about famine, Shannon, it's on record that famine is being experienced in the Republic of South Sudan, correct?
Yes.
Yet, there are equally some other disturbing reports saying that the government of South Sudan, in fact, recently procured armaments, weapons, AK-47s, to fight their own people. Have you heard about that?
I have heard about that, and unfortunately, this is nothing new. I mean, if we look at military spending of countries all around the world, including in the United States, compared to what we provide in terms of development of our own countries or humanitarian assistance, it always pales in comparison to the military expenditures. And South Sudan and Nigeria as well, and even parts of Somalia is an example of when you have drought and when you have famine in areas, how important political solutions are. And if you have an ongoing conflict, it makes the situation worse. In South Sudan, you know, millions of people have been displaced because of the fighting. We have 4,000 people a day that are going into, mostly Uganda as refugees, and they are now surpassing, South Sudan is the third largest country with refugee flows coming out of their country. And this is a man-made situation because of the fighting.
The United States says it's the world leader when it comes to humanitarian response. Is that true?
Used to be.
How is it faring now?
It doesn't look... Well, it depends. So... President Trump, was reported in this country and many countries around the world, came out with a budget. It was a proposal for looking at cuts about 32% of the budget. The thing with the international affairs budget, which is a small piece of the overall budget, it's less than 1% of the overall budget.
Correct.
Most Americans think it's 20% of the overall budget.
So it's really a peanut,
really. It's peanuts. Yes. And now on top of that, we're calling for cuts. And we're calling for cuts at USAID and at the State Department. So you need the USAID to respond to what's happening in these countries and to this global migration and refugee crisis you have happening. And you need State Department.
And a contribution to the United Nations?
Absolutely. So right
public
now...
Public broadcasting?
Yeah. So what we're hoping for is that Congress is saying the budget is dead on arrival. But what does that mean in terms of what cuts they will actually end up with at the end of the day? And right now, if you look at the overall appeal, which is $4.4 billion until the end of July, but $5.6 billion until the end of the year, it's only... I think it's about 19% funded, and the U.S. government has contributed about 27% of that overall funding. And I think we will see a decrease in that over the next years.
Very interesting. A reminder that you are tuned into Straight Talk Africa. To participate in our discussion, please call us at 202-619-3111. This country code is 1. We'll continue our conversation in a moment, so please, don't go away.
The lyrics could be French,
English,
Portuguese,
Bantu,
Arabic.
It is the beat,
the African beat that counts.
The beat does all the translations.
It cuts across all languages and gives us the understanding that this is the African beat.
It is so distinct
and adhesive.
It binds us together.
African Beat on the Voice of America. For more information, visit our website at www.voanews.com/African Beat.
If you like today's show, please write and tell us what you think or give us some suggestions. Be sure to tell us what station you're tuned into. Our address, Straight Talk Africa, Voice of America, 330 Independence Avenue Southwest, Washington, D.C., 20237, USA. Or send us an email at africatv@voanews.com. Log on to our website at voaafrica.com. Or post your comments on Facebook, keywords Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you very much, Esther Githy Ewart. And of course, this is Straight Talk Africa coming to you live from Washington. Let me come to you, Yasmin. You are obviously an influential member of the Somali diaspora. Is there a way that you could, in fact, begin working very closely with officials at Oxfam America to figure out a way how you can get some coordinated response to the people that need it on the ground?
Absolutely. I know some of Shane and his colleagues at Oxfam, and definitely I think we came to conclusion that local and international community partnership and concerted effort is definitely needed. Yes, I can see myself. I've been doing the rounds, and that's where when I met Paul from Oxfam. Since last year, I've been talking about this, about the drought, because I went to Somalia, I went to the Senag region, and what I saw was horrific, and it doesn't surprise me that it has gotten to this point. So, yes, I can see myself working with Shannon. And to say a little bit about the American influence and the USAID's importance of involvement in Somalia, we can't lose our American friends, because they have really, really moved the needle for the positive for what's happening in our country right now, whether it's political stabilization. I mean, look at Somalia. 3 presidents, 3 elections. You've seen the pictures in the last election. Our president from 10 years, almost 8 years ago. Our president from 4 years ago, and our president now. So that is a system of small democracy that's in the making. Mm-hmm. It's something to be very, very proud of, Shaka. So our American friends are very involved in our the stability and seeing solutions to our country. So it shocks me, and I do have nightmares about the cuts with the USAID that the president has just announced. And, you know, we're going to hope for the best, because Obama has put a lot of safeguards in place, and we can't have those removed now, because it will only worsen the situation.
Yes, when you talk about democracy, I think there is something, frankly, to be hopeful, you know, for when it comes to the manner in which you had a peaceful, smooth transition from one individual to the other.
Absolutely.
And in fact, when you go to Somaliland, it's arguably one of the more democratic neighborhood is frankly on the continent. Now, you know, there is the saying that you could actually use resilience. There was a point where they said they could build up resilience so as to make it a weapon for having to deal with famine, or drought, hunger, you know, that kind of stuff. Is that true?
It is true. And I think one of the social media responses was about irrigation schemes, mm-hmm. which mm-hmm. is a type of resilience. Resilience does work. For Oxfam, the most important thing is that you're working with the community. So the communities themselves know better than anyone else where they have resilience, where resilience needs to be strengthened. And we need to invest a lot more in that. So if we look at using diesel generators mm-hmm. versus hand pumps, you know, using solar-powered generators or systems are much better, and that can help people have water year-round. But we don't invest a lot in that, and we don't invest a lot on the development side, which I think is really important, because if you're using humanitarian funding response money to invest in resilience and disaster risk reduction, it's too late. Mm. You should have been using development dollars to do that, but very little percentage of development dollars actually goes into investing in resilient communities. And so we can and should do much better.
Last week, there was a very important conference in the nation's capital. We're talking about the World Bank, really. A conference about land and poverty. Is it worth it, really? This is the 18th edition, for example. I'm told there were over 1,000 delegates from around the world, and they spent somewhere around $130 million. Just that. Wouldn't some of this money, frankly, be good enough to take care of some of these people that are starving?
I think what the World Bank and the IMF and all the organizations need to really pay attention to is creating systems in place so that people are not so desperate to go into a shock of famine. So all those dollars should go into development projects. We should really educate women on the ground in the local communities. We should give them tools to really fetch for themselves. You can't throw rice and water at people all the time. People need to know how to do. People can do a lot for themselves. They are resilient. We're talking about resilience. Africans are some of the most resilient people on earth.
I see.
And so some of those dollars should really go into small enterprises, entrepreneurship programs. We need to educate. I was shocked and surprised when I went to Somalia last year at how much women are so innovative and so creative and so entrepreneurial. They're making small shops in their own houses mm-hmm. and selling to their neighbors. That's an amazing little initiative that really works for that family. And that's how a woman who doesn't have anybody in the diaspora to send her money will make her $50 a month maybe or $100 a month to take care of her family. She pays her kids' fees for education and all that. So development, the World Bank can really help in that sense.
Instead of perhaps simply getting into the business of per diem.
Yeah.
For some, you know, lucky individuals.
Absolutely.
I gather that we have to go to the lifeline of the show, which are the telephone callers. Let's go to Ghana. Good evening, Tafa. You're most welcome to Straight Talk Africa.
Hello, good evening, Shaka.
Terrific. How are you, my brother?
I'm very good, Shaka. My regards to your guest in the studio.
Thank you. What is your question? You have a minute, please.
Thank you very much. Shaka, the issue of water issue in Africa. My question to our guests, would they agree with me that today if you look at Ghana, Shaka, our water bodies, our one of the two important, most important rivers has been destroyed by these illegal miners invading Africa from China with their Ghanaian collaborators? Don't they think that it is a time for world to take a look at this kind of deliberate destruction of African vegetation and the water bodies? Because since if we sit down, is coming to hunt us, then we'll be talking about aid, instead of holding it in the beginning. So this is my question to them. When they think that these Chinese invaders in Africa destroying the water bodies and the vegetation should be stopped? Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Tafa, all the way from Ghana. Let's go to Devon from Austin, Texas. Good afternoon, Devon. You're most welcome to Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you, Shaka. I was calling. I was wondering why there isn't a lot of talk about the African Union really stepping up and being more part of the conversation when it comes to getting the type of resources that are needed in the areas that are experiencing drought, and what exactly are they intending to do to help the people there? Thank you.
Thank you very much. You want to begin with something at least about the African Union or something?
Yes.
Okay. It's okay. We go to the question, please.
I think the African Union should really take an integral part of what's happening on the ground in Africa. If its voice is missing in action, then it's really unacceptable. And I really honestly think not only the African Union, but African governments need to take this issue seriously instead of pushing it to the international community. So it's
You could say that symbolically, at least, the African Union is on the right track, because the newest chairperson of the African Union, Ambassador Musa Fataki or something, actually visited Mogadishu this week and also Juba. So at least symbolically, but at least you know also that structurally, really, it does have teeth, but do those teeth bite?
Yeah, we need the teeth to bite, and we need plans in action. We need action, action. This has to be action-oriented solutions. Visiting is good, awareness is good, but that will not save lives.
Shannon?
I would agree with that, and it's an excellent question, because we need the African Union members involved, as well as IGAD, which is the Intergovernmental Authority on Development, which is majority of countries that we've talked about are part of IGAD. Mm-hmm. And if you even look at South Sudan, you know, the peace agreement was, you know, it was the political leaders, it was some international actors as well, it was the African Union and IGAD that signed that peace agreement. But the implementation of that agreement, where were they to make sure that that was implemented better? Because now we have this conflict that's been raging since the signing of the agreement. I do think the visits are helpful. This is on the African Union's agenda. And so it's great to see the African Union and IGAD get involved. There's an IGAD meeting coming up at the end of July with the heads of state. So let's keep this on their agenda. And I think they really need to, first and foremost, get the funding they need, because we're not at a position. We need the funding, first of all, and then go from there.
Unfortunately, time is not our best ally. Before we go, we would be remiss if I didn't mention the passing of veteran South African anti-apartheid activist Ahmed Kathrada, who was sentenced to life imprisonment alongside Nelson Mandela. He died on Tuesday at 87. Kathrada was one of the most senior African National Congress leaders to criticize Jacob Zuma as allegations of government corruption mounted. President Zuma says Kathrada will be honored at an official state funeral, and flags at government offices would fly at half-staff until then. Well, on that note, thanks to our distinguished guests, Yasmin Mahmoud, founder and CEO, Humanity Against Poverty, and author, Nomad Diaries, and Shannon Scribner, Associate Director, Humanitarian Programs and Policy, Oxfam America. Thanks to our affiliate stations, along with our viewers and listeners, we thank you for tuning in. For many of our Voice of America radio affiliates, Learning English is coming up next. And tomorrow morning, it's Daybreak Africa with James Bate. On behalf of the Voice of America, thanks for tuning into Straight Talk Africa. In the meantime, get better, not bitter. Somalia, Kenya, South Sudan, Nigeria, and more. And please remember to keep the African hopes alive.